We're back, Justin. We're so back.
We're back.
Back from the Philippines. You and I just had a great conversation about balut.
Look it up, but don't maybe.
Don't look it up. It's a fertilized duck embryo that you eat. Okay, it's good, but it's also very difficult to look at and think about. I was in the Philippines. That's where we've been. I've been rather, and you know. You went to Peoria.
Peoria, so just the same, really, night and day.
Do they do balut down there?
No, they do Big Al's. It's a
it's a strip club.
A fun little strip club.
Is it still there? Did it make it through the pandemic?
You cannot look past the skyline of Peoria without seeing Big Al's there.
Because it's right next
it's
to the
right by the Civic Center. Right there.
It's still there. It made it through the pandemic?
Yeah. It used to be closer to the hotel back in the day. It used to be literally, you know where the Hoops Pizza is?
I do. I know next to it. Well, Justin, I'm glad you had a good time down in Peoria. I had a lovely time in the Philippines, which, again, we talked about on our bonus show for Patreon producers.
We tried to have a conversation about Peoria, but it was just about a 20-second conversation.
Oh, we do about hoops and about Big Al's.
Yeah, we just had it, right?
What was the name of the pizza buffet?
Oh, the Firehouse Pizza.
Do you guys stop going there, right?
No, we went there after having some really rude interactions with a manager. The owner stepped in and had been pleasant. They even wrote on their little sign, "Welcome Downers Grove South." It was really nice of them.
Oh, that's actually nice. Yeah. I had a conversation literally yesterday about the idea of buffets and how like buffets are kind of hit or miss, like in general. Like you got to kind of be choosy about what kind of buffet you go to, but that a pizza buffet
you can't go wrong.
Is usually very, very good.
Well, and plus the context of that particular pizza buffet, I do want to sit here and say the pizza's good, but win, lose, draw, you are done.
Yep, it is like
the best.
Yeah, and because I've been, I mean, as you have been, right? Like at a glorifying victory, been there at a
stunning defeat,
brutal defeat, and almost tastes better. At the defeat, because you're like, well, at least I got this.
It doesn't matter. Going home, we got a bus ride. I got some jelly beans in the bus to get me over this.
There really is something about like having those moments with like your friends when you're like kind of team like that, and you're like, yeah, again, win, lose, draw. Just like, yeah, I'm glad I'm with you guys.
Yeah.
You know, like these are the people I'm happy to have done this with.
Win, lose, draw. Keep your suit jackets on because your pits stank after a whole day in that.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, I used to not think so, and now I know.
And now you know.
Now I know. I used to not be like, I don't smell. I'm like, I do. I do all the time.
And I am conscious about it.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I feel bad about it all the time.
So we were in Iowa for Nationals, and it was pretty hot. Like when we went, it was like a little heat spell that was going on, and I had to wear like a suit jacket from 8 a.m. in the morning to like 10:30 at night.
Yeah, it's. That'll trap it.
And we were at what is that? Dave and Buster's. And I had two options. I was like, I keep this fucking jacket on, or I take it off and everyone it reeks, like smells it, sees the pit stains, knows it's me. So I just kept on my jacket the whole time. And I can't see how many people are like, hey, just take your jacket off. And I was like, you don't understand what I'm doing for you. This is not for me. This is for you.
Because here's the problem, too. Not only do you smell, but then your jacket also smells on your chair.
Oh, yeah. Well, you can't get rid of that.
It's 2 points of stank.
Yeah, I can't do it. I can't do it.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say something about it being hot, being in a jacket, Dave and Buster's. It doesn't matter. It's a box. Everyone, welcome back to Hitbox episode number 232. My name is Peter on Spitdeck. Joining me as always is my good and wonderful friend Justin Magovich. Justin, I said this before in the bonus episode. I grew an accidental beard because there wasn't like a great place for me to shave in the Philippines. And then I just came home and I was like, I just have this now. And, like I think it works all right.
Yeah,
it's been a while since I've had one.
It looks good.
Thank you.
I almost kind of grew in a little accidental beard thing this weekend because I didn't do anything from like Friday to Sunday, any like hair care. And I was like, oh, I got a little something happening here. And then this morning it felt like I was like trimming the hedges as I was getting rid of that. But Let me tell you, you accidentally grown a beard. It looks a good look on you, my friend.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I did feel like a rugged mountain man coming home after having not, like, taken a great shower in, like, 2 full weeks, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I haven't really used a proper bathroom, as we say. had some business to take care of. That's neither here nor there, Justin. I would like to tell our listeners that they can join our Discord. The link to that is in the description of this episode. They can also support us on Patreon at patreon.com/hitboxpod. We had a lovely discussion about the Philippines and what it's like to be there, and all the fun and interesting and wacky foods that I ate. All that and more is there. We'd like to thank our Patreon producers, by the way. You can join the ranks of Jay Noel, GKS, and Josh Durham. If not, that's fine. You can follow us on Twitter at HitboxPod. I'm off Twitter personally. I know you are as well. I'm thinking we might switch over to a different platform potentially. Depends. We'll have to see. But if you want to support us there, you can do that. Or you can rate this episode in your podcast player of choice. All up to you. Justin, here's a preview of what's coming up in the news. First thing is that there was a state of play while I was gone. Monolith Studios got shut down and the Wonder Woman game was canceled. And we got a new look at some of the Pokemon games that are coming out in the next year or so. We're going to talk about those and more. I just want to also say, like, hey, we were gone for like 2 weeks. This is a bit of a roundup of some of the highlights. We're not going to touch on everything. And then, you know, next week we'll be back to like, hey, what happened? Like this week specifically. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I get you.
In the meantime, you want to join me in the Metacritic Roundup?
Let's go!
Metacritic Roundup.
First game in the Metacritic Roundup is Monster Hunter Wilds.
What?
Justin, this thing scored a 90 on the Xbox Series X, a 90 on the PS5, and an 88 on the PC. Sounds like it is a solid entry in the Monster Hunter franchise, although some people have said, hey, this game is actually a little too easy. I don't have any experience with these games, so I can't really speak on that. And I also did see on PC there are some pretty significant performance issues, which might be the reason why we're seeing an 88 versus a 90. But 88, 90, those are two sides of the very same great score, I would argue. What do you think of Monster Hunter Wilds? Is this something you're interested in?
So when people say it's too easy, to me, that's almost one of those things that kind of like draws me in, because a game like this, mm-hmm. whenever you're playing a Monster Hunter game, obviously the beginning of, you know, the game is like you're just like leveling up your gear and trying to get a little bit stronger, keep hunting the same things over and over again. But eventually when you get to those end game kind of like high level like raids or those high level like monster fights, that's when the game challenge starts ramping up. And quite frankly, that's when I'm not like ever in the game. So the fact that the actual like game itself is easy enough at this point, to me, I think that's a victory. And to me, that like makes me want to play it even more than if the game was like, oh, this is more Monster Hunter. I heard, I think it was on a round table, it might have been on the IGN podcast, talking about one of the reviewers basically was like, I never had a cook before I went on a hunt. I've never done that before. And I'm like, yo, dog, that sounds perfect to me, that I don't have to cook and like plan all this stuff out every single time I just go in. I kind of want just to like mess around the world, kind of go through stuff and play it. And from what I'm hearing, this game does have a much more kind of like guided story, like with cutscenes and things like that. Not that you didn't have that in Monster Hunter Worlds, but this one seems to be a little bit of a shorter experience and a little bit more of a streamlined experience to like just beat the core game of it.
I agree, right? To me, hearing like, oh, this is a little bit easier does kind of interest me just a little bit, because I'm like, oh, okay, then maybe I might actually be interested in getting into these things, because like they are dense games to my understanding, right? Like have you played them or no?
I played Monster Hunter, I think 4. I played that for probably 5 to 6 hours, and it was a lot of just kind of slogging through it. Then I played Monster Hunter Generations Ultimate, and that's where I started getting it a little bit more. And then I played what was the one that just came out on the Switch? Monster Hunter,
I don't know.
Not Dawnbreak, Monster Hunter Rise. I played I played that one for quite a bit, and I did like it a lot. In fact, the thing that got me out of that game was they have these like RTS modes that were kind of this these tower defense modes that were kind of supposed to be a change of pace, but to me they were just like an unfun slog to get through. But I really did appreciate that game because that game specifically, for the first time, it felt like a strong action game. And I didn't play Monster Hunter Worlds, but I think that one also was in one of those lines where they just crossed that threshold of making the combat something that was accessible for people enough that it was easier for people to pick up and play and like. And then once you start to pick up the game and get it, that's when all this other stuff you start to appreciate a little bit more. And I think I appreciated playing back Monster Hunter 4 Generations more after getting into Monster Hunter Rise, just because I got what the game was going for. Because it's not like a traditional... I picked up the initial Monster Hunter 4 thinking that it was like a Dark Souls game. I mean, it has that kind of look to it, a little bit goofy. But then you jump in and you're like, this shit ain't... That ain't what this game is. So it is one of those things that is kind of on my radar. I don't know if I'm going to get to it. I mean, if in another 2 weeks nothing's out, I probably will purchase it. But right now I'm in a pretty good place with what I'm playing right now, as we'll talk about later.
Yeah. You know, it is interesting though. Like, I forgot that Monster Hunter Rise came out on the Switch first, and then it was exclusive for like 6 months or something like that. Before it came out in, almost a year, actually. It was March and then March 2021. That's, I think, kind of significant there. But can I say something about Capcom? Probably one of my favorite developers right now, because no matter what series of theirs you're into, like, you do not have to wait that long between titles because they're working on those fucking games.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's their budgeting, their scheduling or what, but like the fact that, yeah, like, a game comes out in 2021 and then here it is 2025 and there's a new one. Like, I think that's actually kind of like significant. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I mean, this was like Monster Hunter Rise. It was not like another Monster Hunter Worlds in the fact of what it was. It was like another game in the series. And to get that like quality of a Monster Hunter game every couple of years, I think is awesome.
But they do that with like Street Fighter. I mean, you know, there was what, like 5 or maybe 6 years between Street Fighters. But I mean, Resident Evil is a great example. Like, those things are coming out every 3 years. Yeah.
Yeah. Not just like crappy games.
Yes. Yes. I think that in my opinion, they are like absolutely the one of the best studios out there right now. Just in terms of like their output. Cause I mean, what else are they doing right now? Like, they've got,
The one last year that came out, you weren't a huge fan of it. Dragon's Dogma. That was Capcom, right?
Oh yeah. That's Capcom. Yes. 100%. They also do like Devil May Cry. Onimusha, you know, like Ace Attorney, like, I don't know. They got a lot of stuff in there. That I think is like, I don't know. I think it's cool that they're just like constantly like making good on their franchise.
I mean, between Monster Hunter and Resident Evil alone, you're going to get every 2 years a high quality game with those two.
Oh yeah.
That only 100%. Keeps getting better, in my opinion.
And you know what I'm excited about with Resident Evil? That's been like 2 years since we got the last one.
I know. So this, you know, next, I mean, this next one is going to be a remake of Code Veronica that no one cares about.
Well, I think that's the thing. It's like, they either do Code Veronica, they do 5, Or they got Resident Evil 9, which I'm thinking is 9.
You forgot one, Resident Evil 0. When's the last time?
Also, Resident Evil 0 on the 3DS.
That's the one when the shark attacks you, right? Or is it the... Yeah, yeah. Shark?
I don't... No, that's in Resident Evil 5. That's in Resident Evil 1.
Resident Evil...
Resident Evil shark
0
attack.
Shark. Maybe I'm thinking of an alligator.
There's an alligator in 2.
Okay. Well, maybe I'm thinking of a snake.
Resident Evil. That's Snake. What's his name?
Plissken.
What's that series called?
Plissken.
Snake Eater.
Snake Eater.
There are sharks in the Resident Evil 1 remake, at the very least. Neptune is the name of this shark.
Isn't there one in Resident Evil? The one when you're in like the sewers and it comes after you. I just typed in what are the animals in Resident Evil 0, and I hear deer, wolves, stallions, cougars, serpents, and eagles. I don't think I answered the right question with that one.
But I think you answered the question of your heart.
Thank you.
Either way, Monster Hunter Wild, I think it's cool that people are into this. Congratulations, guys. Yeah, you got another one.
Do you have any interest in playing this?
Not really. It just doesn't really seem like my thing. And that's okay. I don't know. Like, I bet if I tried it, I bet I would like it. Okay. But it's just not like something that like immediately jumps out to
me. If you ever have a chance on anything to like try Worlds, it would be interesting to see you play that to see if you like it a little bit. Just to like
have
get
it.
Oh.
From the PlayStation Plus collection. Do you remember that from on the PS5?
Oh, yeah.
So I have it, but.
Maybe it's fun. Speaking of PlayStation Plus, fucking Veilguard is out this month for the PlayStation games.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm a little pissed.
Yeah, you should be.
Yeah, not only.
It's like 4 months old.
Not only did I buy it full price when it came out over Metaphor, but it's now free. Well,
that's in like PS Plus is in like the one I have.
Yeah, like the whatever the monthly
that's
two.
Insane.
Yeah. So hey, play it, man. Get your own opinion. Get woke.
I'm working on a video about Mass Effect. I mean, like, I might play some of it just like to get some footage.
Yeah.
Because that's a part of the discussion
the lore,
about Mass Effect.
The lore. Do you need Anthem? I can give you that shit.
I do talk about Anthem. I'm like, my friend Justin thinks it's all right.
It's not as bad as it could be.
I do kind of say that about it, Mass Effect Andromeda, where I'm like, it's, you know, it didn't launch great, but like, it's not bad enough that it could like ruin the reputation of Mass Effect, you know, whatever.
Yeah, that was the end of Mass Effect 3 that did that for everyone.
Yeah, exactly. Like guys, Mass Effect already
remember?
Did that. Like, people already, yes. Next up in the Metacritic Roundup is Like a Dragon, Pirate Yakuza in Hawaii, a title that I think is quite bad. But people seem to like this game, all right? A 79 on the PS5, an 89 on the Xbox Series X, an 81 on the PC, unscored on the PS4 and Xbox Series and Xbox One. It's coming to both of those things. This is a spinoff of the Like a Dragon series, although they can't stop putting the name Yakuza in their game titles, which I find kind of funny. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think the whole title is supposed to be kind of stupid. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
it has to be because it's a bad title,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, like I think it's like over explaining it just to be kind of funny with it. Like Pirate Yakuza in Hawaii. Like to me, it's just like show don't tell, guys. But they clearly just told you everything in it.
Yes, and this is another, since it's a spinoff, the main series are the turn-based RPGs, right? And this is a like an action
more
RPG.
Action-y. Yeah, yeah.
It follows, I'm forgetting the name of this guy. I think he was voiced by Mark Hamill in one of the older ones. He's the guy with the eye patch. You know what I'm talking about? Mijima? Is that the character?
It could be
Mijima,
right.
Mijima, maybe?
It sounds right. I trust you.
I think he was a villain at some point, but he was kind of like a lovable villain sort of situation, you know?
When I went to play Like a Dragon, the first one, they start bringing in characters from other Yakuza games, and I'm like, it's probably hitting hard for someone right now. Not me, but it's probably hitting hard for them.
We said this when the last mainline one came out, where I'm like, honestly, there's a lot of these games that come out. I'm happy for the people who are into this series because you're being fed, you know what I mean? Like, there, I mean, you know, RGG Studio is like Capcom, just like fucking wait 20 minutes and they're announcing a new game for you.
Yeah.
That said, they come out too often and are too long for me to be able to be invested.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? This seems like a fun sort of spinoff. If you are a part into this series, it seems like you will like this game, but it also seems like it is not like a deep game. You know what I mean? It's you are not getting the next Yakuza or Like a Dragon game. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, it looks silly. And like, not that the Like a Dragon Yakuza games aren't silly. This one seems like they're just like, fuck it. It seems like a side quest that turned into a full game.
Yeah. I mean, there's like Mario Kart in it.
Well, any
which
of
like, them. That's all of them.
Yeah.
But like, yeah. So there you go. Yeah. I'm not going to pick this up. I also just think that I'm just not into this series. Not for any other reason other than just like there's just too much of it. And I don't think that is something for me.
I really like my time with Like a Dragon. The second one, it just took too long and it just became. It just became too much of like just story for story's sake that I don't know if I ever need to play one of these again, but that doesn't mean I don't appreciate them.
Yeah, you did. You played The Man Who Erased His Name? Or Judgment?
Yeah, I played Judgment, and I started Lost Judgment, and then I played Like a Dragon, and then I played Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth, and I started to try to play the original Yakuza's, but then it gets confusing, like, what do I play first, and then the game qualities are so different in terms of old games being old, that it was really hard for me to kind of get past that stuff. And then, like, I hate, like, playing that game about, like, well, actually, you should start with Yakuza 0, but maybe just skip to 2, and I'm like, oh, fuck, I just want to play a game with a story that makes sense.
So Like a Dragon : Pirate Yakuza in Hawaii.
I really wish colon was like literally written in there instead of like you just saying
the me editorial. Last game is Avowed. Justin, this is the highly anticipated game from Obsidian Entertainment, creators of Fallout New Vegas and The Outer Worlds. It scored a 78 on PC and an 80 on the Xbox Series X. This is from Xbox Game Studios. Justin, you've played Avowed. I have not. I'm interested in playing it. I just don't have Game Pass or the money to pick this thing up right now. When I get Game Pass at some point in the year, I will certainly play this. Oh, here's something I forgot to mention. Sorry about Game Pass. I have a code for... What's the pirate game? Not Sea of Thieves. Skull and Bones.
Skull and Bones.
Downloaded it for work. Was going to try and play it. Get a big message when it starts up saying, hey, do you have Game Pass? And I'm like, no. I was like, well, you need Game Pass to play this thing. I was like, oh. I'll never play this. Goodbye.
Not what I'm getting it
for. I'm never going to play this game.
So you need actual Game Pass to play the online stuff?
I forgot that Game Pass is tied into, like, Xbox Live is gone. And now that I don't have Game Pass, it means I don't have internet for non-free-to-play games, which I think is very silly and very stupid. So, yeah, it's irritating. But
that is annoying.
You've played this.
I have
about,
played it.
Tell me all about it.
All right, so... let me start with my just general thoughts of the game. It is probably the best one of these games I've played in a long time, but that does not mean it is an excellent game.
When you say one of these games, you mean something like
Skyrim,
Oblivion, yes. That kind of thing. Okay.
Outer World, I think, was the last time I played a game that I was kind of like, all right, this is scratching that itch. But even more so, this game is scratching that itch for me. And I think while the characters aren't as fun as Outer Worlds was, this game, I think gameplay moment to moment is a little fun. But that being said, I feel like I will tire of this game by hour 20.
To my understanding, it's like not that long, right? Isn't like hour 20, like that's... close to the end, right?
I think I'm not the target demographic for timing a game like this. So let me start at the beginning and then kind of talk about it. I put 12 hours into the game so far, and I just left the first major area.
Yes, okay. You are not going to be the average.
Right,
I may. Main story on how long to beat is 16, 17 hours,
which I don't 39 know minutes. How.
Just mainlining it, right? Main plus extras 38, completionist 59, all play styles 36.
I'll probably be closer to like the 40 mark, but I think by the time I get to the end of the story, I'll be sick of it, and that is just fine. I don't have to play the whole game to still enjoy it. So the game kind of starts off in the kind of like a lore dump. What is the world that this game is based on? There's like another like series, Pillars of Eternity. Basically in the same universe as Pillars of Eternity. Obsidian did that too, if I'm correct, right? I think
they did do that, yes.
Okay. So it's
I had no idea about this.
The same worlds and kind of same characters. Had not played Pillars of Eternity. I don't know much about this world. So one of the first barriers was just me getting used to some of the names and stuff like that, which once you start to get a hold and understanding of some of the factions, you're going to be in it. It's fine. But basically the game starts when you are a part of this empire and you are basically the king's envoy. And he sends you over to this place called the Living Lands, which is a weird name for a place. And the Living Lands is basically like a place where criminals, bad people, people looking to escape life just settled across the sea. And they kind of go there as an escape from, like, the empire. mm-hmm. and you were sent there by the king in order to investigate this thing called the Dream Scourge, which is this like disease that's destroying the land. It's infecting the animals, and it's infecting the plants, and rumor has it, it's infecting the people. So you were sent there to try to save the day, and you're something called, what do they call the godlike? And basically, when you were born by, you were touched by a god, and you were given this like weird exterior look. Basically, you look like you have fungus all over your fucking face. And that was one of the toughest choices in the character creator to decide how fungusy I look. Because, like, have you seen the cover of this game, right?
Yeah, of the skeleton that's like coming out of the fungus or whatever.
Yeah, I thought that was a bad guy. No, that's you.
That's awesome.
So you have this character creator, and then like once you like spend all the time on your face, you have to put your godlike skin on, and it's either just like complete just mushroom over the face you just created, or you have like weird like mushroom hair that kind of takes place of whatever hairstyle you have. So it was a little bit of a weird choice, I think, but basically it kind of sets it up that your whole life you've been kind of this person that people view as being a outcast. A few people view godlikes as being special, but most people kind of exclude them from society. And through your own work ethic or whatever your backstory is, you kind of build yourself up to be a trusted advisor for the king. And he basically sends you across this like water area to like save the day and like find out what's going on. So the whole world is set into this place in the Living Coast that has been settled by people for years, that suddenly the king is sending his envoy and has ambassadors there, and they're starting to take more and more control of this land because, well, they're the kings, they're the imperials. We, you know, these are our people. But the people who live there are like, dude, we've been here this whole time. You're suddenly coming here and taking all of our resources. Feels a lot like, you know, England and the U.S. and those kind of relations, or any kind of imperialism that, you know, throughout history. And super woke. And then
<Go on.
laughs> you as the envoy have a couple of options. Do you do your duty to the king and do the job that you're sent to do to stop this green dream scourge? Or do you listen to the plight of the locals and be their savior while also trying to be the best envoy to the king that you can? And it's a pretty cool setup. And I think a lot of the interactions are kind of cool. And this is one of those games that is pretty easy to get out of combat encounters without really trying, if that's what you want to do. This might be light spoilers to a game, but there's a character that early on in the game does something bad to someone in your group. And basically, the king tells you to go, and the ambassador tells you, go kill this fucker. And you're like, all right, I'm going to find this guy. And then as you're doing it, you start to realize that this person who did this bad thing is part of this rebellion, and that these rebels are just kind of fighting back and protecting themselves. And then you're starting to go through all of these different like internal like questions about, should I be doing this to this person? And then finally you get to the encounter with this guy, and he just kind of stands there and he's like, you shouldn't be here. And he starts to go on about this whole thing, and he's like, this is a sign. I'm not going to attack you. This is amazing. And basically, you can choose to attack him and do what you're supposed to do and kill him, or talk your way out of it and let him go, or persuade him to turn himself in. And it's never really done as like a moral choice. However, you meet the inquisitor of the kingdom. In the land, they're literally introduced with like this rock music. They're in this like dark black metal outfit. They cut to the face of this inquisitor. Their eyes are fucking burning through their mask. I'm like, okay, this is supposed to be the good guy. Like, there's no way that the person in flames is the good guy. But they still kind of like set up this like kind of interesting moral dilemma as your character, because if you just ignore what the king says, you're not going to take care of this dream scourge. So you have to kind of play along because it's destroying this place and the people in it. Mm-hmm. But you also can't go full company line, because if you do that, then the rebels, you're going to basically overthrow the rebels. There's even this one like little moment where you talk to one of the rebels and she basically tells you where they're hiding. And what I did, not really knowing what I was doing, it was like, listen, you should just probably talk to the ambassador. He's a reasonable guy. He will, you know, kind of do whatever. And then later on, it turns out you walk past the ambassador's office. You see her hanged body outside of it. So like you told her to do that, but they ended up like taking her and killing her because of it. And that was your fault because you told her to go there instead of her just running away or attacking her yourself or doing whatever.
Yeah.
So right now at this point of the game, they really set up a cool kind of like unclear moral situation when you pretty know what the right option is, but they also put you in this position where sometimes you have to kind of do things and interact with people in ways you don't want to because you know for the greater good of stopping this sickness, you're put into that weird position. And they have like little of these moral choices throughout the whole thing. And a lot of the times they'll give you an A and a B option in a quest. And these are like side quests. They're not like whatever. You find these people who basically got in a land dispute, and the people who are trying to get their land pull out a knife, and they, in the process of defending themselves, kill these people. And they're trying to escape and leave. And you have the option to either turn them in or help them escape. Both are kind of right if you really think about it, but what are you going to do? And they also do a fun thing where before any major choice like that, they'll make you ask your companions what they would do, which I think is a cool way to kind of at least get some like color into your decision. Like, what's the character that you like? What would they do? Or this character usually would go this way, but why in this situation are they going in this way?
Mm-hmm.
So I think the storytelling and the moral choices and the world that you're kind of put in is very fascinating. The other thing that I really like is I think they do a good way of gatekeeping levels without it being this is level 20, you can't go any further. And the reason I know that I'm going to take about probably 40 hours to play this game is because instead of leveling up to attack people, you have to get quality armor and weapons in order to attack people of higher levels. They basically tell you when you fight an enemy, they're like, oh, your quality of weapon isn't good enough for this. And basically each weapon starts off as common, and then you can upgrade it to fine, then it's rare, and then exquisite or something like that. There's basically four levels for each. But the upgrade materials for the fine, good, whatever, are only accessible in the next land or the next zone of the place. So I basically spent the first 10 hours of the game in one location, got all my weapons that I liked up to a certain level, like as far as I could upgrade it with the materials in that section. And then by the time I did that, I felt like I was kind of a god in that section. I could do all most of the challenges and the quests and the combats and that. And then I go to the next section and I start getting that level 2 upgrade material to upgrade my stuff. And a lot of the weapons that you get, you can take a common, like the one of the first weapons I got in the game is my go-to weapon. It's just it was a common great hammer, and I've upgraded it to a point where now it's a fine great hammer plus one. And its stats are way higher. I keep grabbing other common war hammers, but now mine's way better, so I just scrap them for more parts. And sometimes they'll give you like rare items, but even then, sometimes the common item or the fine item that you've upgraded is better than some of the rare and unique items. So it doesn't necessarily feel like there are thousands of different weapons that you can choose from. It feels like any weapon you get can eventually be upgraded so it's usable. But there's enough different types of weapons and enough different types of fighting styles that you don't have to just use the same sword the whole time. I could use my two-handed hammer, and eventually I could be like, I'm kind of sick of this. Let me try a new fighting style. Let me try this one-handed sword and shield. Or let me try a blunderbuss. Or let me try a pistol and something else. And it's not bad because you already have good enough of those weapons. And if you keep upgrading them throughout, eventually you can start experimenting around with stuff. So I really do like how they are leveling up. They are forcing me to level up and progress in the world because it's not just about like getting random experience. It's about literally going out and getting enough upgrade materials in order to upgrade my weapons so I'm strong enough to do that. They also have limited of the upgrade materials too. It's not like there's just everywhere. Some of them are like basic plants that you find in the world. And once you get that plant, it doesn't come back. So it's not like you can just keep farming this stuff to like overlevel yourself really early. It kind of encourages you to explore around the world. So I'm really, I think that's not that it's new, a new way of upgrading, but I think the way that they give you upgrade materials is just the right pace to keep you really engaged in the world, requiring you to do side quests while also like shuffling the main story. So I'm really liking the overall like pace of the game, but I do feel like by world 3, once I get to those level 3 upgrades, I'm going to be a little sick of it because I don't know how much more there'll be for me to do at that point. It'll feel like it's the same loop if the weapons and the numbers just get higher.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, to be honest with you, this sounds like my kind of game.
Oh, it is. Yeah.
I was interested in this, but like hearing you talk about this sounds really cool.
Yeah.
And also the fact that, you know, people are saying like, hey, you know, like between 20 and 50 really depends on how much, you know, how deep you get into it and whatever. Like, I'm on board. Mm-hmm. Like, that sounds pretty good to me, you know, knowing that this isn't going to like take up all of my time. And also is this a game that has like a sense of humor to it, but not like, I'm trying to think about how to say this. Cause I feel like a lot of people tend to say like, oh, that MCU style of humor. And like, I don't, first of all, dislike that inherently, one, and two, I find that a lazy criticism when talking about humor. Cause like the MCU's level of humor isn't like terrible. You know what I mean? Like I like that enough. There's a different type of like lazy humor that I don't really like, you know, but like the fact that it has a genuine sense of humor about it seems to be kind of interesting while also not being 100% like cut by that, you know.
And it's still like a game that is like filled with like real moments. I said the person got hung because I told them to go and turn themselves in. But there's like another moment where this like person's doing a ritual that's clearly a bad ritual, and you can choose to sabotage the ritual or you can help him do it. So if you help him do it, it fails. And then it's mm-hmm. like, ah, damn, there's one way more way I can do this. Basically, you're going to have to sacrifice your life. And mm-hmm. you can basically say, okay. And then your companions are like, I really hope that there's another way out of this. Like, you have a plan, right? Like, there's something that you're going to do. And you're like, yeah, I got this. So you basically go around it. You get to this one machine. And basically, it's like, all right, here we go. Thank you for your help. And it kills you. And then you get an achievement. mm-hmm. And like the whole thing was just set up like, this is stupid, you shouldn't be doing this, right? But if you do it, it gave you an achievement, which I thought was pretty funny. That's to funny. Like do your That's creativity funny. The negatives about this game, while I do think it is one of the best one of these games in a while, I do mm-hmm. not think so far the characters are very good or interesting. It's pretty obvious what they have a troubled past, and they're like talking around like what they did in the past. Because basically this place is filled with people who have been given a second chance or have been leaving a bad life behind. You know, they all have that thing. So when they're coy about where they came from, I wonder what happened to them. It's, you know, like I'm sure the stories will develop a little bit more, but right now I'm not really drawn in by the characters very much. And I don't really necessarily care too much about the characters. It just feels like they're thrown in with you by convenience rather than any kind of big storytelling thing. Like the first character you meet is called Kai, and he's voiced by Garrus from Mass Effect.
Oh, cool.
So it's a little bit like jarring at points, but then you think about like how every fucking character in Mass Effect 2 is introduced to you, your friends and foes alike. Like it is like they're badass moments, and then you're invested in their stories because of that, because they start with these like recruitment missions that you have to do. So I'm not really getting too much of that. And then, like, I don't want to be that person, Peter. The menus and the overall, user interface from...
Is it bad?
Is bad. Is really bad.
It's genuinely what turned me off of Indiana Jones. I mean, among other things,
you
right?
think, you like, think that's bad? This one is bad in the fact that it's sophomoric. Like, it looks like shitty menus from, like, Morrowind days of Bethesda. No. It doesn't, like, the buttons don't necessarily make sense. There's no like good flow to as you're going through it. And then plus it looks like you're looking at these old shitty menus. It's just not the most pretty thing to look at. And it looks a little bit dated. There's all these videos. I don't know if you've, on your trip saw any of these like videos, the comparison towards Oblivion and this game, and how like,
I have not,
there's
but...
just better physics in Oblivion. There's more like interactions in Oblivion and stuff like that. Like, you know, Oblivion, you start hitting anyone, you'll kill them. In this game, nothing happens. There's this one scene. So basically you're the king's envoy, so you have special privileges in certain places. There's this one, like these two characters who are like creating like a like color text in the town. And there's basically been a murder, and it's like two sheriff deputies like trying to find out what happened. And they're like, oh man, I don't know what happened. Oh, it's another murder, blah, blah, blah. They're going on and on about this murder. And you could just like walk up and then you can like grab the murder weapon from the ground, which is just a sword. And then one of the characters says, hey, This is a crime scene. You can't just take that. And the other character's like, well, that's the king's envoy. He can do whatever he wants. And it's just kind of like, yeah, like they clearly put that there so you would go in there and you would reach for that sword and have that interaction and stuff like that. So it's kind of fun. But like in terms of like it being like this real immersive sim, they don't really make you feel immersed in this world.
Yeah. I personally don't really. If the game works, it works.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And if it doesn't have, you know, like these like super interactive pieces to it, but that doesn't really matter in the game because it's not asking me to do that. Then that's not something that I'm really worried about. You know what I mean? Is that the case, or is it the sort of thing where there are things you wish you could do that you cannot do in the game?
I would say there's a few things I wish I could do or I wish would limit me more so than the game like does. For example, mm-hmm. I think one of the things you go into a shop in Skyrim or any of the Elder Scrolls games, you just steal all the shit and then they're gonna like, you stole it. You can either get away with it or they capture you and then they fight you and they give you a bounty and stuff like that. This game, you just walk into a store, anything that's on the counter, you can grab. It's up to, nothing happens. No penalty for it.
I see.
I think part of it's that morality system in it when there isn't really a morality system that's obvious in the game, but it doesn't feel like the game is like realistic enough for me to like play around like a sandbox. It feels like this like fun amusement park I can walk in that really has no consequences.
I see. Okay.
Does that make sense?
Okay. Yes. 100%. And you don't like that? I mean, like it doesn't work in that way, or it just doesn't feel alive then, huh?
Yeah. But to me, that's not like a huge issue with it. And again, comparing Oblivion to this game, having played both of these games, I'm like, it's night and day in terms of like just the gameplay itself. Yeah, Oblivion is better with that shit, but the combat feels like butt. This combat's really fun. I think the way you upgrade your weapons and the upgrade trees that you have for like your abilities and your magic, I think is really fun. You basically have the fighter, the ranger, and the mage that you can choose from, and you can kind of spec in any direction that you want, and it's really not hard to, like right now I think I'm a strength intellect build, and I barely use any magic powers except for the one magic missiles I use, and then I just kind of use ranger and fighter abilities because they're more useful for me. So I'm this like really smart scholar mage / hammer wielding dude, and I like how they let you do that. And it kind of fits what my play style is, and I could also alter it. They allow you to, I think you have to pay some gold to respec, but it's nothing like that's like difficult for you to get in the world. So I do think like the combat is actually a highlight for me. They have a cool dodge system. They have a block parry system. If you're into that, I'm not. I just hit and dodge. The magic feels like it hits. The sword hits feel like they're hitting the characters. It doesn't feel floaty. Like as much as I love Skyrim, that combat's not great. You know, it's,
yeah, I mean, it's just mash, right?
Exactly. This combat feels really good. And the thing that I really love about this game, people were complaining that the game is small. I first thought the zone I was in at first was all the world was, and then realizing that there'd be like four more at least places to go, I'm like, okay, this is a pretty big world. But the world feels crafted. It doesn't feel like just there to be there. One of the things I had a problem with in Starfield was that game doesn't really feel crafted in a way that made exploring fun. And the whole fucking game is about you being a space explorer.
Yes, 100%. Is this fun to explore?
Oh yeah, they have like cool like puzzles, not like jump puzzles. The world, it feels like if you're going out of your way to find something, you're gonna get something there that's worth it. Whether it's some good upgrade materials or like maybe a stronger weapon or something that makes it worth it to go in that direction. And like the actual like environments are like created in a fun way that actually exploring them and getting from point A to point B isn't just running to the marker. Sometimes it's basically finding out how to traverse this puzzle in a non-frustrating way that I know sometimes that can be frustrating in these open world games, but this one's not. And I really find that if I look on the map, I'm like, there's this whole area I haven't been to yet. If I go there, I'll usually be rewarded by something in that world, in that place. even the towns themselves are kind of built as puzzles. There's this one kind of like dock town that you're in, and this one guy's like, "Oi, the pigeons have taken all my friends' medals. Can you give me my medals back?" And you basically have to go into these like jump puzzles where you go into these like really hard to reach areas in the town and grab medallions from these bird nests that are there. And while I was doing that, I was like, oh shit, you can almost go anywhere you want if you find the right way to jump up to these places. So I think actually interacting with the world is fun because it's not just combat, but also exploring, and then also the dialogue and the moral choices are fun. So like I'm getting hit on all three sides by good gameplay that I'm never quite bored, and there's always something to do.
Okay, I think I am on board for this. I think I'm in. It just has to be like, when do I get
to it?
Game Pass.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's not even to it because I'm not even like playing anything recent right now, just because of my current like financial status and work status, right? But like, I want to play this game. And right now, this is the only game from this year that I think that I am like hearing about and going like, I would like to play this video game.
To add one more layer to this, if Baldur's Gate had the characters and the story, but this gameplay, this would be easily a 10 out of 10 game of the year for me.
How does, I mean, like, you know, does there... Is there a comparison between the two in terms of like characters or story? Are they like of a similar level?
Yeah, you might have a voice in your head telling you to do stuff, and you might wake up in the middle of the night and to have this voice talk to you in the middle of the night every time you go to camp. I would say they're more similar than not, but again, Baldur's Gate, like the actual like writing and the actual characters, the actual story, the actual branching paths that you can go on is second to none. That's to me why that game is special, not the combat. Yes. That's just a me thing, but
agreed.
This game does not have that.
But does it have like the solid characters and stuff? It sounds like it does at least a little bit.
Okay. It's okay.
And I mean, like, is it on par then at the very least with like the Outer Worlds, like from Obsidian before and stuff?
I would say the Outer Worlds, in your face, had the characters a little bit better and had the tone a little bit better. This one, the more I get into the world, the more I'm starting to like the characters in the background, if that makes sense. I'm growing to love them more, where I think in Outer Worlds, I just kind of love the characters from the beginning a little bit more. Minus the robot I never woke up and was told about that when I beat the game. And it's like, and this robot was never introduced and fell asleep. In Outer Worlds.
Yeah. Like, yes, that is 100% very missable.
Yeah.
I'm very into this, and I'm glad to hear that you're having a good time with it. Yeah. This past 2 weeks I've played nothing but Stardew Valley, and I'm having a wonderful time with that. A delightful time with that, in fact.
Delightful. Did you miss playing with your girl?
I did. Yeah. I did. And so I have two saves. I've got the save with her, and then I've got a save for myself, that I started when I was on the plane. And I'm on the end of winter one in my personal save, and she and I are in the middle of fall one. So I've already eclipsed that.
Who are you shacking up with in this game?
All right. So it is not Emily. Emily's the sister. Haley. Haley's the blonde girl. And I was talking to our friend Josh, and Josh was like, "Why?" And I was like, "Because I didn't. First of all, I accidentally became her boyfriend, because basically you buy these like to. Okay, so there's like 10 heart levels that you can have with anyone in the game, but you can only get 8 for anyone who's single. And then to unlock the other 2, you have to give them flowers, and when you like specific flowers, and when you give them those specific flowers, you become their boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever." I thought that if you gave them I didn't realize that giving them the flowers made them your boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever. I thought that just unlocked the final 2 hearts. And then once you got to 10 hearts with them, that is when there was like a choice moment. So I did not realize that was happening. I just did that because I was like, well, she likes flowers. And I was like, and you know, I want to get to level 10 with everyone. And then I was like, oh no.
And this is how people accidentally get married every single day in the US.
It happens. It happens to people. People get married because they are embarrassed. Not embarrassed, but like they don't want to like hurt the other person's feelings. And that's definitely what's happening to me in Stardew Valley. She's nice though. I've learned to love her.
Haley,
and, like, yeah. She's like kind of like mean to you at first. But then maybe this is actually telling about my choice in women in real life sometimes. Not Elena. Elena's perfect. but maybe other relationships I've had. She's mean to you at first, and then there are a handful of scenes that you have with her where she kind of like opens up, or like there's a scene where she wants to take pictures next to like some farm animals, and you like take photos with her, and then she like falls off the animal and she gets all muddy and she's like upset at first, but then she kind of like laughs it off and is like, this is actually really fun. I'm like, oh, that's endearing. You know what I mean?
That's pretty cool. I have a picture of her doing the peace signs next to a cow.
Yeah, that's kind of what happened.
Do you name your animals?
I do, but I usually just randomize.
Okay.
Because there's like an option to like randomize the names, and usually they're pretty good.
Yeah. One of Claire's chickens is named Fart, and that's my favorite. We always look for Fart on our farm.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
A witch cursed one of my chickens. and then now it gives me these black like eggs that are worth way more.
Are the black eggs like filled with like a fertilized embryo that you're supposed to eat?
That I eat, that I slurp up,
yeah.
That you eat.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are. They are, and it's amazing. And I only eat them if socially pressured. that's it. I did that in the Philippines is what the joke here is. Not everyone was privy to that conversation. Justin, let's talk about the news.
Let's do it.
There was a state of play while I was in the Philippines. I have not watched. You have watched. Is that correct?
Yes, I have.
I caught some of the highlights, but I also was kind of didn't have the time to like catch up after the fact. I was watching while this was happening, so I didn't catch everything. The big thing that I caught was a look at, where is it? I don't remember the name, but I remember what it was.
Saros
with Raul Coley. This is the next game from Housemarque, creators of Returnal. We got a cinematic trailer showing, hey, Raul Coley's in this. They said we're getting a gameplay trailer later this year, which makes me think that we are actually getting, like, this game is coming out within the next year, I would say. I don't know if it's going to be, like, in 2025, but, 2026 feels right based on when Returnal came out.
I think it's coming out in 2026. It's currently scheduled for that. I wouldn't be shocked if it's...
Did I ever tell you that I was at a party with Raul Coley?
Oh, was he cool?
So I didn't talk to him.
Oh.
And my friend Kevin was like, why didn't you talk to him? And I was like, what was I going to say to Raul Coley at this busy party where he's like with his friends?
Have you ever tried Balut before?
Well, so Kevin is Indian and Raul Coley is Indian.
Oh, that's
and
okay.
Kevin was like, I would have gone out to him and been like, can you believe we're the only Indian guys here?
Well,
and
okay.
I was like, Kevin, I didn't have that move.
Yeah.
I didn't have the move.
I thought he was going to tell you, well, I'm Indian. So you could have been like, do you know one of my best friends in the whole wide world
Kevin
is Indian?
Yeah, I'm a friend to all.
Yeah, come on.
So you don't worry about it. Yeah.
Not the way, by the way.
No, I was like, Kevin, I did not have a move. And he's like, oh, I would have done this. I'm like, well, I think, Kevin, you're glad I didn't do that. but so basically, my best friend, Raul Coley's in this game, and I'm really excited for him. I mean, we didn't see anything for this. It looks like it's Returnal-ish based on like the tech, based on the like science fiction stuff going on. We didn't get much, but like, is that the vibe you get too?
Well, the thing that got me, I just saw Raul Coley. And I was like, another Gears game. Fuck that. But then like he has this moment where he like looks back and then you just see the balls coming at you. And I'm like, I know what this is.
The balls coming at you?
Like the
there was
gunfire.
Was there gunfire in this?
Yeah, like you don't see it as gunfire, but let me see. I'm in the trailer. Ooh,
me too. Oh, yes. Yes. This thing shows up with the multiple hands and stuff.
Yeah, and you like see.
Oh, it's in his eyeball.
You see
I
in
see,
his
see.
Eyeball. It comes at you, and I was like, that's what it is. And then they're like, Saros. And I was like, ah, that seems like a missed opportunity to make it a little bit more connected.
Well, but also, like, Returnal is such like a, like, not a nothing name. But it, like Saros sounds like it's going to be maybe the name of the planet or the, you know what I mean? Like, whereas Returnal is just like Eternal Return.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Come back stronger. And then they say that shit and you're like, oh, you're going to keep dying. Huh? Huh?
Yeah. But that's the thing. Like if it is a sequel to Returnal, you know what I mean? Like I'm about it.
I don't even know if it has to
even,
be.
Not like, even a, yeah, not a sequel, like but a like spiritual, a, it is 2026.
Yeah, a spiritual successor.
Follow
up. Yeah. Like,
yes.
I am down with whatever they do at this point. I will need your Me help too. To get through it again so I get past that fucking place that looks exactly like Saros. And once I can do that, then the rest yep. of the game the rest of the yep. game is mine. I still can't believe I beat that game, man.
Dude, you did great.
Yeah.
That third area is like, I think, the most miserable.
And then
part
once
of
you
game.
Get through it.
Or is it the second one?
No, the no, second one is the desert one with the yeah, flying which is fine. Then the third one is like that. It's just a gauntlet to get through at that point.
Yeah.
Then it gets a little bit more manageable. But
yeah,
thank you, save states.
Well, what else? I mean, I think we're both down for this, right? Like,
yeah,
Housemarque is great. Relicole is great. Like, I'm down for all of this. Was there anything else big that was here?
I don't want to be like negative, but not really. I mean, ones that were interesting was the Shinobi Art of Vengeance game that came out, kind of like a 2D action game. I think the Shinobi franchise is a pretty like known franchise, right?
It sounds familiar,
yeah.
But also maybe it's just the name.
Like, I think it's a cool stylized 2D action game. I don't think it's my thing, but that was a game that kind of was like, oh, I could see that hitting. And I think the art style itself looks pretty cool. Yeah, but other than that, nothing really hit me as being like, I need to play this. A lot of this stuff was stuff we already knew with maybe a couple release dates to it. But this didn't seem like, to me, Sony hitting hard with what they're doing for the rest of the year. If it was,
oh, yeah, go on.
You would be getting your Death Strandings and finding out what's going on, even though that's not a Sony exclusive game, right?
It is.
It is? Okay.
I think.
So you'd be hearing about Death Stranding. You'd be hearing about a Ghost of Yote. But like, I didn't hear that stuff. So I'm sure more will come. And if not, oh well, good games.
Yeah. I mean, we did get Days Gone Remastered, finally. We've all been waiting for it.
Yeah. I've been waiting to ride that game like you ride me. What? No, I didn't say that right.
There was I did see people talking about Tides of Annihilation. Do you know what this one was?
Tides of Annihilation.
It's a character action game.
Yeah.
These are kind of coming back, huh? These disappeared for a while and in favor of everything being Souls likes, and now these character action type games are kind of coming back, and I can get down with that. I like these sorts of games.
The one thing, correct me if I'm wrong, I think this is a like first time game by this studio. So I would just get a little worried about that, just not knowing what the game is. I mean, it looks stunning, but
yeah,
it's harder for me to get on board with it. And I know that's me being like, oh, I only want sequels. That's not true. I think a game like this would have popped more if there was a studio behind it that I know, even if it was something like a Square game. It might be a little bit more like, all right.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, because I'm not even finding like a website for this studio. Eclipse Grows Games. Yeah, I'm interested for sure.
Yeah.
Abiotic Factor is an early access game on PC that's coming to consoles that might be kind of interesting for me. Some Nikkei Goddess of Victory DLC for Stellar Blade.
Are you going to get back into Liza P?
I wonder, do I have the season pass to that game, because I got a copy of it from the devs.
Oh, that would be great if you did.
So if I do and I have that for free, then I will certainly play the DLC, which is coming this year, Lies of P Overture. I'd give it a shot at the very least.
I hope that if I would, like, I don't have to finish the game. Like, I hope you could just start it,
because
that would be a little bit of a barrier for me, unless this is like some fucking Shadow of Erdtree shit, when you have to like get to a certain part of the game that's not necessarily easy to get to quickly in the game.
Yeah, but luckily Liza P is like super linear.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, bad, I mean? At the so games, you know.
How far did you get though? You got past the big puzzle guy who turns into the small puppet guy, right?
Yeah,
not
I got
big puzzle,
I got
big
past
puppet
that
guy, but
yeah,
that feels like if I were
three
to be
quarters.
Deciding where, yeah, three quarters of the way through, if I were deciding where to put DLC, like how far you would have to get, I would say you'd have to beat that guy.
Yeah, yeah.
But
this is like with Geppetto and you're in a whale.
Yes. Yeah. That does happen.
Wait, the whale happens in the original Liza
P? I'm trying to remember.
Geppetto is everywhere.
Yeah, I feel like there's a whale.
I'm going to make you into a Riedel boy.
Or is that the DLC?
I'm going to make you into a Riedel boy, Pinocchio.
There's something to do with a whale, but I don't know if I don't know.
Alas, I'd have to poor Yorick.
I don't know.
It's Moby Dick.
We got a release date for Metal Gear Solid Snake Eater.
That's never mind. Anyway,
August 28th. That game is coming out this year. Are you excited for that?
For
Metal Gear Solid?
No.
Really?
Yeah.
Just full on no. How come?
I don't know if it's going to be enough of a big enough change for me to want to go back and play it from the original game.
Interesting. Because it is a full remake, right? I mean, like...
Allegedly. And like, is it a remake actually? Or is it just like a new everything on top of the old game? Because remember we talked about how it's the same voices as before. They're not new voices. And like... I wonder how limited it is going to be. If it is something that you have like full control of your character, it controls modernly, maybe I'll go back and play it. But I don't know. It's going to have to win me over.
I mean, do you think it's going to play like an old game? I mean, are you getting any note like from the trailers and stuff like that? Are you getting the vibe that that's the case?
That it's the same game? Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No, well, then.
I mean, like...
Or just like more like a remaster, like just updated visuals.
Yeah, like, situation. Yeah, that's what it feels like to me. But even then in this trailer, if I'm correct, I don't really think there's much of any gameplay.
From the trailers?
Yeah.
There was one gameplay trailer, I thought, but I could have been making that up.
Yeah, I mean, it looks to me a lot like the original game. And not that I didn't like the original game, I just don't know if in a world where other things come out, this is like my first, I gotta play this again.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, I played them all, don't get me wrong. I like them all. This is probably in the series my third favorite game. But don't ask me my order because people really will disagree with me.
I won't then.
Thank you, thank you. But number one is the 5. That is my favorite.
That seems to be a not controversial thing.
Phantom Pain? Oh, many people love 4. I fucking hate 4.
But people love 5. People do love 5, though. I know that, right?
The unfinished game with the objectified woman character that heals by photosynthesis?
Yeah. I thought Kojima explained it. I thought Kojima explained it, and then it made it all okay. Doesn't that make it all okay? Guys, there's a reason why she's in a bikini.
I think that story is one of those that was unfinished. I think people enjoy the gameplay, but the story itself is just kind of like left on a cliffhanger. I think Metal Gear Solid 2 is like known for its story, and it's known for its, not 2, Snake Eater 3. I get confused.
I also get confused because I've never played them.
Metal Gear Solid 1 is the bad-looking graphic one. Metal Gear Solid 2 is the one on the oil rig.
You're the other guy?
Yeah, you're playing Raiden, but then you meet someone named Plissken, which is Snake. Plissken, right? Wait. What does he call himself? Plissken.
I truly don't know.
Snake. It's something stupid like that. Anyway, and then one of the bad guys in that game is a fat man on roller skates who sets bombs, and you have to beat that guy.
That's kind of fun.
Yeah, it's fun. That's my second favorite Metal Gear game, by the way.
This third one?
Second one.
And I've also heard that people really like that one.
It's a good one. It was my first in the series. Anywho. Gotcha.
Yeah, so... Well, I was going to use you as the tester of like if that game is for me. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
I would say it's the first chronologically in the series.
Okay.
Never having played other ones, right? Jumping in here would be a good starting point to see if you're into the vibe.
Okay. That makes sense.
And if the gameplay is updated and there's enough to make it warranted for me, like if this were like a Resident Evil 2
situation,
I would love this game, but I don't think it's going to be that.
Okay. I will take your word for that. The other thing that we got to see here is just a little bit more of Split Fiction, which is the Hazelight game that's coming out this month.
I'm pumped.
Which I don't need even more. I don't even need a trailer, more trailers for. You know what I mean? Like for me, I'm like, oh, it's the next that co-op Hazelight game, I'm in. I'm done. You know what I mean? Like I'm going to play this. I'm absolutely going to play this with Elena. It's going to be a really good time.
That's my spring break right there.
Oh, totally. Totally. Yeah, so like, hey, I'm all here for it. Anything else? Borderlands 4, don't care. Sonic Racing, new Sonic Racing game, huge.
I'm huge, hey man, dude. Hey man. What if Mario could be unlocked? Can you imagine that?
Whoa.
Heck, I'd take Luigi.
I think we're all rooting for Luigi these days. So, in other news, Monolith Studios.
We should have done the fun one last.
Are we not doing the fun one last? Are we not talking about Pokemon?
We should do this one right where it is.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Monolith Studios, creators of the Fear series, creators of the Middle Earth Shadow of Mordor and Shadow of War games, and the studio working on the upcoming Wonder Woman game. That studio has been shut down alongside Player First Games and Warner Brothers San Diego Studios. I believe one of those studios is responsible for Multiverses, which is, I mean, this whole thing is just a huge shame. The Wonder Woman game has been canceled, according to I think Jason Schreier. The game had been rebooted several times and that like it was having a troubled development and that it was pretty much at square one right now, like with where it was in development after being in development for what, like 5 years already. Just such a huge shame. I think we were talking about this, I mean, before I left, right? About like, hey, what's going on with this studio? It's because Rocksteady is apparently working on a new Batman Arkham game. But you know, after sort of what happened with Suicide Squad, makes you wonder, like, hey, is Rocksteady gonna be okay too? You know, I mean, this whole thing is just a huge bummer, right? Of just like, studio closures and whatever else, but what do you think about this?
I mean, this started with going with, oh my God, someone should purchase WB, to then it being like, this was like a couple years ago. People were like, that would be a good studio for people to pick up. To now it's like, oh fuck, is anything going to survive?
Right. I mean, right. Like, it's just like, is there anything that is going to come out that isn't coming from like an established first party studio?
And even Monolith is one of those studios that you would assume would have been safe and insulated with stuff, but like they were just asking them to do stuff that it just wasn't working out for them. And
I think the current studio system just doesn't have the time and the space for things not working. Right. And like, hey, obviously, when you sit down to make a game or really, you know, work on any project, the goal is to be successful. Right. And you can be successful through like intricate planning and things like that, right? But I think it is important to recognize that like you can plan all you want, but sometimes things don't go according to plan and things don't work out, right? And so you need to have the time and the ability to pivot and be able to make changes and work on things if they're not coming together right. And games are just too expensive, right? To be able to spend the time to really get things right if things aren't going the right way. And, you know, they're sitting here trying to work on this Wonder Woman game. And if it's having issues, that's fine. It needs to take the time it needs to take. But if it's costing millions and millions and millions of dollars for, you know, additional years of development, because that's just how much games cost now, then that's an issue. And then either game gets canceled or the studio just gets like shut down or there's layoffs or whatever. Right. Like, and that's just such a shame because it kind of makes it feel like, hey, the creative process is kind of under attack, and that if you are properly engaging with the creative process, you are at risk of losing your job. And that's a shame.
I forget what director this was, but it was like a pre-Oscar interview. It was a director talking about how a very similar thing is happening with movies and movie studios, how you have your like big budget AAA movies that will bring people into the seats. And then you have your small indie movies that are out there that are kind of like don't really get people into the seats as much. And if you go to most theaters, you're not going to be able to like find those small, well-crafted movies as much because everyone just goes for these big popcorn things. But even nowadays, so many of those big popcorn movies are just sucking. Like they are throwing money at problems instead of using talent and creativity. And for, I'm not saying Monolith is not a talented studio, but these big like companies are forcing these developers like to do things that are outside of what they do, or force them to do things that are going to be the next AAA Grand Theft Auto, Fortnite, instead of what is the best game that this studio wants to make that they want to do. And it just feels like a lot of the times they're like imposing their will on studios and not allowing creativity to flourish. They're using AI algorithms instead of like the human touch, which I think is where all of the stuff happens. Like all of the problems come from is when we don't let creatives time to explore and come up with good ideas. I mean,
yeah, 100%.
It's anything that a creative person does, like your first draft is not always the best draft. You know, your instant success is something that was years in the making. Like you can't just assume that if it's not great at first, it's never going to get great, because that's not how art works.
No. And, you know, we talked about this too, about like this idea of, hey, like studios that are new need to make a game, and it's usually not going to be perfect. But that second game they make is when it's probably going to start getting really special. We've talked a lot about Stellar Blade and how it's a, in my opinion, a pretty mid game. Just it's fine. It's not terrible, but it's fine. That studio believes in its development team. Clearly, I mean, they're getting based on like what we can see from the news, right? They're getting bonuses. They're investing in their studio to make something good the next time, and hopefully they improve on a lot of the things that are not fully fleshed out from that game. You know what I mean? To make something that goes from being, yeah, it's fine, it's a little undercooked, to like, oh wow, this game gets what it is.
Yep.
You know, but in the current studio system that we're seeing, that is absolutely the exception to the rule right now, right? Where these games just don't get the time to breathe. And if they're not perfect right out the gate, then they're just seen as failures. It's just such a nightmare. It's so depressing, you know?
Yeah. Ugh.
Yeah, this is a shame. This is a big shame. And like I understand that, like, hey, if like, you know, the game isn't working, then, you know, they have to make, you know, decisions and stuff like that. But like I do think at the end of the day, this comes down to management, and this is a management issue, and this is not a development issue, because you understand what game development, they should understand what game development looks like and what game development is, right? So just a huge bummer. But Justin, what's new with Pokemon? There was a Pokemon Direct this week,
gotta direct,
right?
Them all. I don't,
Pokemon Presents,
I to be honest with you, I just watched the Pokemon ZX thing. ZXY is WAZD.
Pokemon Legends ZA, terrible name.
Right, Zah. Well, unless you like pizza. Oh, by the way, our porch goose has a pizza outfit on right now.
Okay, all right. Took me a second. I'm here.
You know, like, yes. It's a porch goose.
The goose that lives on the porch.
We captured it. Yes, we tied it up. We put it on our porch. It attacks our neighbors we don't like, greets the ones we like. But you can put outfits on it, and we put a pizza, like a slice of pizza outfit. So it's like heads
that's
going through
fun.
The pizza. So that's what Legends RC is Zah, or Legends Zah is all about. It's about putting pizza on everything.
I'd be into that. Yes, I'll say this. For me, when the Pokemon Presents comes around, I
gloss
skip
over
to the end. Well, I skip to the end because I'm like, you know, it's going to be updates to, you know, their trading card games and like Pokemon Sleep or Pokemon like the like color matching games and stuff like that. Just stuff that's not really for me, like Pokemon Cafe. Just not for me. That's okay. I'm here for like the mainline stuff.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, the ZA stuff is the stuff at the end this time. So I think to me, that's the only trailer that I really have much interest in talking about.
I mean, everything else, it's like a Pokemon Unite. Didn't Suicune, can't you be him? Who's that?
I don't know. And I'm going to be honest with you, Justin. I don't really care.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, Pokemon Unite, it's not for me. But
okay. Wow. Play Marvel Rivals with all those other jabronis.
What I'm saying is you can tell me about it if it's something you're passionate about. But for me, sitting watching these trailers, I just don't care.
I think the big thing is the Legends ZA. And
yes, I agree.
I gotta be honest with you.
Please, I want you to be honest with me.
I'm a little nervous about it. I think one of the things I liked about the Legends Arceus was the big explorable open worlds. I thought like it was cool how like the worlds were kind of massive in a way that, you know, you would walk around and like, oh, what's up at the top of this mountain? And it wouldn't be like an upgrade. It would be a rare Pokemon that you'd find in these locations. So you'd kind of explore areas to find rarer, different Pokemon. That's what kind of got me through. And you could kind of look across the whole world and see everywhere you wanted to go. The problem with that was that the performance of those games was wretched because it could not sustain that open world.
Yeah.
Even worse so in Scarlet, when I guess they learned nothing from Legends Arceus and did the same thing, but worse somehow. So it,
that said, like those games came out so quickly in succession that it's like they were in development at the same time.
They probably
had
very similar systems and stuff in them and whatever.
Yeah.
But they seem to have avoided that by using like a more urban setting. And the buildings and stuff seem to create a lot of barriers in it. And it looks like they have these weird like platform zones that you can walk through in them where you encounter like wild areas with Pokemon in them. But the actual exploring part of it, I don't really see that much exploring in this game. And that worries me a lot because that's literally the one thing I can kind of hold my head on is that, oh, you're going to the top of these roofs and doing stuff. All of this looks like these claustrophobic battles in like roof settings in the city streets with some cars there. Some like random Pokemon like parsed out throughout the roads. It doesn't necessarily look like this big, fun open world the way that I want it to be. Now, I see some hints of that at times, but it seems so limited that I'm a little worried about it, to be frank.
I understand. It's that thing where every Pokemon game that gets shown off in trailers, you just look at it and you're like, hey, I'm concerned about how this is going to perform. And like, I think that there is a difference between saying that and saying like, and it needs to look, it needs to have ray tracing and all this sort of stuff. Because like, as soon as you say like, hey, I maybe like, I don't know how this looks. You have a lot of people like sort of like turning around and being like, I thought you wanted worse games that came out quicker and you're not even kidding. You know what I'm talking about? Like there's that meme, but like, I don't remember what it is, but it's like, I want worse looking games that come out on cheaper budgets and whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Basically saying like games don't need to look how they look. And this, you know, thing is kind of a nightmare. And like, I agree with that sentiment, but like, I also think like, I don't mean that they should look terrible. Like, I think they should like have like a fine art direction. And I think like looking at other games on the Switch, and of course, you know, you're comparing development timelines and budgets and all that sort of stuff. But like, you look at other games on the Switch and it's like, hey, the games can look good on the Switch, you know, and games can't like, there's no reason that games can't look good on the Switch and things like that. So I completely understand, completely get that. My problem even with like Pokemon Scarlet and Violet is I just didn't think they were that fun. You know what I mean? Like Legends Arceus, I appreciated the what they tried with the gameplay loop. And it's that conversation we just had about Monolith, right? Like, it wasn't for me, but I'm interested if they explore those ideas a little bit further. So for this, I am interested in it a little bit more because I liked what they were going for. Does that make sense?
Yeah. As you were talking to, one of the things that was in my mind in like thinking about like bigger isn't always better with these games.
Yeah.
I went back and I looked at some images from my favorite Pokemon game, which is
truly don't know.
Sword and Shield. And
oh yeah, I did know that, yes.
And that game looks beautiful.
Yeah, it was like smaller environments.
They had smaller environments with those open safari Pokemon zones that you had in there that were these kind of open
there's
world
like the
things.
Big one.
Yeah.
It's like a hub.
There's like two of them in the world and each one's different, but like those things weren't the best running, but that was like a feature. That was like a sub point that you could go to like get extra Pokemon that was separate from like the more linear kind of Pokemon game. That's the shit I need again. That's what I want again. And I think the reason I liked Pokemon Sword and Shield so much was because it felt so much like another Pokemon But the gameplay in of itself, like seeing the Pokemon run around the fields, being able to avoid them, being able to capture the ones you want, having the open zone area, having the Gigantamax battles that you would have in that. I don't know. It just hit this sweet spot of things that I just want to have in a Pokemon game again. That I, why don't they just go back to what I love?
I think they cannot. I think that like the fact that they have like the genie's out of the bottle a little bit for Pokemon, where it's like, if they go back to that, I think people are going to complain and say like, oh, it's not open world anymore. And I'm like trying to like shake these people by the shoulders. And I'm like, you don't want that. Ways.
Don't do this to yourself.
Yes, yes. Because of course, like, of course, the dream Pokemon game is like a big open world game, because like that's the pitch of Pokemon, right? Like, go explore the world and whatever. But like, you look at the original Pokemon games and you're like, oh no, these were like kind of like linear world experiences. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Where like the zones of the world were actually kind of like levels. It's almost level based, right?
Yeah.
And like, to me, the pitch of go anywhere, do anything is not what you actually want out of Pokemon. But I think that Pokemon fans maybe don't understand that, because they just want big.
They want, and they want the anime.
Yeah, and that doesn't exist.
No.
Like it just, like the logistics of that just don't work, right? And I think we saw that with Pokemon Scarlet and Violet, where it's like that game tried to do the Breath of the Wild thing of like, you can go in any direction you want, but there's actually a recommended direction. It just doesn't tell you. You have to look it up. Otherwise, you're going to get like absolutely demolished by level Pokemon, like high level Pokemon.
My wife loves Sword and Shield, and there has not been another Pokemon game I could recommend her play since that game.
Yeah, right, exactly, because it's just like, these are not like as straightforward as you want.
Yeah, I mean, even the, what was the remake that they did?
Shimmering Diamond and Pearl.
Yeah, even that doesn't like hit the sweet spot for like what I think would bring people in. And I really thought there were so many good things that Sword and Shield did that I wish they just looked at that and said, this is what the standard should be, instead of like, how do we make it bigger, better,
yeah,
more open?
And you know, it's so interesting too, is like this idea of bigger, better, more open is like, has been a problem in games forever. But like, I feel like it was a problem last generation in the Xbox series, Xbox One and PS4, you know what I mean? When everything was going open world, and Pokemon is like getting to that now. And it's like late, where it's like that thing about just like, hey, not every game needs to be this. In fact, it's good when games aren't this. That said, Pokemon ZA, like I said, like, I don't know if I'm going to buy it, cause I just haven't been really, are you?
I will, man. Saying? I'm a broken human being. I could bitch about it all day long, but I will buy it.
But here's the thing. That's what I can appreciate, though, is like, you are going to be able to give me a perspective on like if I should play this game.
Yeah.
Or not.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, whereas like I'm out, I'm too far out to be able to just like say like, I have to play this. But you're going to be able to say like, yes, it fixes some of those problems you had with Legend of Arceus. You know, it doesn't fix these problems. But, you know, I'm open to hearing what's up with that.
Do you want to know the biggest problem with Legends Arceus for me?
Those cutscenes, man.
No, it was really hard to play it and not fall asleep.
Because of those cutscenes, dog. People just like, you described it perfectly back when that game came out, where you're like, they just slink.
They're just like
off screen and then just like into place. And then they talk at you and it's boring. And they just slink off, like out of frame. And it's just like so boring.
Literally puts me to sleep.
So boring.
Literally
yes.
puts me to sleep.
And no one says anything interesting, or like there's like no interesting characters, just like mash A.
Did you ever beat the game?
I did, yeah.
By the time you get that last battle, I was like, this is the fucking battles I want.
Yeah, where you're like on the big like the
top thing where you like fight Arceus or whatever, like that.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted.
Like Giratina comes out or something.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, it was yeah. So it was a frustrating game for me. I don't exactly remember all of my critiques, because it was, what, 4 years ago at this point?
Yeah.
But like, hey, if you've been working on this game for 4 years, now that is something I'm interested in. Now that is something I'm interested in, Pokemon Team. We'll see. I think that's going to do it for us, though. Glad to be back talking with you, Justin, about video games.
Feels like we never left. Feels like I never left.
It feels, and can I tell you something? I had the most insane whiplash. Did I mention this to you? I got home on a Tuesday, and on Wednesday, I was like back at work 100%, like the full day. And so there was just this like whiplash of like, was I gone or was I just doing this the whole time? You know what I mean? Was that a dream? So I'm having a weird week. I'm having a weird one, but so it goes.
Hey, you know what? Day one.
Day one and we're back, baby. Yeah, so that is going to do it for us. Thank you so much for sticking around with us. If you want, you can join our Discord server. The link to that is in the description of this episode. You can also support us on Patreon at patreon.com/hitboxpod by becoming a $1 podcast producer or a $3 deluxe podcast producer like Jay Noel, GKS, and Josh Durham. If you can't support us there, that's totally fine. You can find us on Twitter at hitboxpod or rate this episode in your podcast player of choice. Archie Makovich has made a surprise appearance. What's he got going on?
I gotta pee.
What's that?
I gotta pee.
Dude, can I be honest, Archie? Me too. And I've just sort of been like folding and unfolding my legs.
Yeah,
this whole time.
Yeah, I just peed on the floor. It's fine.
Dude, and that's the other thing too. Is that's what I did when Justin was telling me all about. Well, I'll leave you to that then, Justin. Thanks for chilling with us. We'll catch you next week. Always remember, old games are old. Bye.
Bye.